Morning Show. Dr. Barney Wilkinson.
I'm Dr. Richard Marshall.
Good morning. It's November 1st.
November 1st, and have I got some news for you this morning.
What's the news?
Daylight savings time. Daylight savings time.
Yes, I made a mistake last Friday.
No, but it's understandable.
Uh-huh.
It did change.
Uh-huh.
The law changed in 2005 during the Bush administration. Traditionally, because Halloween prompted you for daylight savings time.
Right.
The reason is because it was always the last Sunday of October.
Okay.
You were right.
See? Yeah, that's what
Again,
I thought.
Do you get tired of being right?
No.
Okay. Well, you were right about that. However, what you didn't know, and of course there's no reason why you should know this, and I don't remember it, but it's happened 10 times.
Okay.
Daylight savings time in 2005 or 2007, was moved from the last Sunday of October to the first Sunday of November.
Okay.
And that was done to save oil. It saves 100,000 barrels of oil per day.
It hurts my brain to think about that.
And the first Sunday of November
okay.
is this coming Sunday.
Okay.
You know, it happens to be, you know, October ended on a Monday, so now I have to wait a whole week beyond what... But I don't remember this happening on the first Sunday of November. Do you?
I don't know. No, I don't.
I don't either. But they said it was in 2000. Now, maybe it went into effect this year, you know, that the law was passed, but starting in something. But it sounded like that's why it happened.
That's interesting.
So there is an explanation for our confusion. You were right. It's the last. It's around Halloween. That's
right.
The prompt, right?
Yeah.
That's changed. Now it's the first Sunday of November.
All right. Well,
we are sure this time.
We're sure
about the clock. We've had some mail come in about, do we really turn our clocks back this weekend, guys? Because we know a great deal about many things, but not clocks.
But not
time change. Not Greenwich Meridian time.
Astronomical.
Okay. Anyway, we wanted to clear that up.
All right.
Okay.
So, but that is, that's not exactly what we were going to talk about today, but it's good to know.
But it is November.
That there's a difference. Yes.
We are into the, I mean, like it or not, we are racing.
Yes.
Toward the holiday season.
How much time left? So, but today we're going to talk, and we're not going to talk about a specific article today or a specific column or anything like that. We're going to talk about almost a genre of articles and columns that have been out. And this was triggered by a podcast that I was listening to not too long ago. And I listened to a number of podcasts just with lots of different information, lots of different strategies and things like that for a variety of stuff. Anyways, in this particular podcast, there was a cardiologist talking about what he believes to be the primary cause of so many of our health and even mental health issues recently.
Oh, yeah. This is the one you told me about.
Yeah.
The lightning guy.
Yeah. And so, you know, I'm listening to him, I'm thinking, you know, this is going to be pretty good. You know,
right.
we talk about, you know, inflammation in your body a lot, especially from the things that you eat and everything. And he starts out talking about inflammation.
Mm-hmm.
And then he shifts a little bit and he starts talking about inflammation, that we have all this inflammation because we wear shoes. And because we're not grounded in the earth as much as we used to be, and so because the earth is struck by lightning so many thousands of times a day, the earth has this sort of charge to it, and that when we walk in conductive shoes, so he talks about like leather shoes and things like that, things that don't have rubber
or
neoprene soles or barefooted. That it sort of transmits, we collect some of that electrical energy into our body, and he was talking about things. And I was there until we got to that point. And then he starts talking about how, you know, that diabetes is, you know, related to not walking around barefooted, and that heart disease and...
Not absorbing this electrical...
Right.
Force.
And it got me to thinking that, you know, we see these trends where people, I think the population in general, but then even some professionals have a really difficult time differentiating causal and correlational information. For example, one of the things that he says is that if we look at about the time that, you know, all these, you know, fancy tennis shoes and rubber soles and neoprene soles and everything were coming out, that's right around the same time that we started seeing this spike in, you know, health related problems and diabetes mm-hmm. and everything. And so, you know, this guided his particular line of research into looking at the relationship of this electrical energy. And at what we're seeing, though, is that's a correlational relationship. It's like, as you get older, your reading skills get better. But your reading skills don't get better because you're older. Your reading skills get better because you're practicing and you're getting more exposure and things like that. Your age in and of itself has nothing to do with your reading skill, except as it relates to the experience and practice.
Increasing age doesn't cause reading to improve.
Right.
It's related to it.
Right.
Because of experience.
Right. They're correlated. It's not a causal relationship.
Right. Right.
So I wanted to talk a little bit today about how to differentiate science and pseudoscience and how to really get in there and understand, you know, when you go online and you're Googling information mm-hmm. about, you know, whether it's diet, whether it's, you know, the impact of exercise or mm-hmm. whatever the case may be, or the effects of, you know, walking around barefooted on your physical health. How do you differentiate good information from information that's probably not as solid?
And I'm glad we're I think we're broaching this topic for the first time. This is the first time we really discussed this topic. And I'm glad we are, and I hope that we can talk about it additionally, because we're in an age where people can, in fact, we were gonna call this talk, we were gonna title it
Science versus Pseudoscience.
No,
but it's better to call it Beware the Google.
Beware the Google. We can now, through Google, through this fabulous search engine, we can access medical information that until a few years ago was available only in medical school libraries.
Mm-hmm.
Now with the internet, this information is available. So now people Google things and they challenge physicians and they challenge other professionals because they have access to more information.
Right.
That's a good thing. But not all information is born equal.
Right.
And so what our obligation is now, yes, we can be in possession of information, but now because we have the information, we also have the obligation to search for accurate information. Didn't say not necessarily scientific, but accurate information.
Right.
Because there, as all of you know, there are lots of charlatans out there. The latest thing is this bleach business, you know, there's, you know, for a cure for autism. Well, everybody's looking and wants to find I don't want to say a cure for autism, but an intervention, a successful intervention for autism. And so there are people who are unscrupulous, who will tout some magical cure that this will take care of autism. We got into trouble with autism by thinking that the cause was immunizations.
Right.
And now we have children getting whooping cough and measles and other avoidable diseases. And we know that it's not the inoculations, the immunizations that are causing it. So we have to be careful as consumers that, yes, the information is out there and you can access it, but make sure you're accessing reliable and accurate information.
Right. Yeah, so one of the things you want to do is, I think that one of the strongest sources that you can search, mm-hmm. instead of just going to Google, go to Google Scholar, so scholar.google.com.
Scholar.google.com.
Yeah. Okay?
Not just Google.
Right.
There's a difference.
Okay. Yeah, so Google Scholar, of course, it that searches the research literature, and it searches like Medline and Psych, Ovid and PsycInfo and some of those other sources that's going to give you more access to research articles and publications that have been peer-reviewed and examined under a little bit more strenuous and tight guidelines.
Right. Yeah, other people have looked at
it. It's not just somebody's blog.
That's right. We're not trying to sell. They're not just selling something.
Anytime
you see sponsored link, you know, be careful because they're selling something. .com, you know, be careful with .com because that's a commercial site.
Right.
They're selling something. So be careful with those sites. So go to
scholar.google.com. And then another thing that I always encourage people to do is you know, look at how it relates to your life.
Right.
Just as a quick example, you know, we do talk about diet a lot here. And, you know, I talk to people often about how to shift their diet and how to shift what they're putting into their body, because that's going to affect how you feel. Now, you will read, if you Google or if you're searching and reading what some people think about the relationship between diet and mood and diet and behaviors and things like that, there are people who are adamant that there is absolutely no relationship between what you eat and how you feel.
And these are professionals.
And these are professionals.
These are professionals, MDs, PhDs, who do research.
Absolutely.
Right. They know how to do research. They know the difference between some kind of a relationship and a causal relationship. So even they will sometimes take this absolute approach to their discovery or their theory.
Right. Yeah, I was reading a couple of sites this morning, and it was so interesting because the exact absolute nature of that they were criticizing one side for, they were using on their side.
Right.
But when it comes to, you know, again, just sticking with the example of diet, to say that there's no relationship between what you eat and what you how you feel, that should challenge your own experience. Because what happens on Thanksgiving? Well, you eat something, you eat turkey and you eat those things that we know are high in tryptophan, and it makes you tired.
Right.
Well, so we know that what you ate made you tired. It affected your level of alertness, your level of activity and arousal.
Right.
So we know absolutely from our own experience that what you eat affects how you feel.
Right.
To negate that doesn't make...
Right. Because our brain has about 100 chemicals.
It has
hormones, neurotransmitters, and other chemicals. About 100 of them. And they're produced, they're extracted from the foods that we eat. So you eat food every day, and your brain extracts the nutrients it needs to build those brain chemicals. And if you don't have enough serotonin, you might have symptoms of depression.
Right.
If you have too much dopamine. So having too little or too much of something will affect your mood, your affect, your feelings, your cognition.
Right.
So to say that there's no relationship, I had trouble with that one.
Right. Now, then when you go, of course, if you go too far, then you get into problems because we have GMOs, genetically modified organisms, right? And so now we have all of the labels and everything that say non-GMO, or if it doesn't have that label, then it presumably GMO. Has GMOs.
Right.
And there are proponents who say you should absolutely stay away from GMOs. And there are other individuals who say, well, there's not a lot of evidence to say that GMOs really cause any problems. And with that, the jury is still out. We don't know for certain what effect GMOs have. Now, do you want to, so then it becomes just a personal choice.
Right.
But no one would say, or, you know, I certainly wouldn't say, and I would be very cautious if I read someone say, oh, well, you have to stay away from GMOs because if you're eating GMOs, it's going to cause an anxiety disorder.
Right.
Or it causes you to feel this way or do that or do this. I haven't had that experience. I haven't had the experience where I consumed something with GMOs and it made me feel a particular way. And so I don't have a personal experience that relates to that.
Mm-hmm.
And so I don't have any reason to be drawn on one side of that argument or the other.
And GMOs is a good example of another anomaly that we face. Every legitimate intervention will work with some percentage of the population.
Right.
It doesn't matter what disorder we're talking about. Anything will work with a portion of the population.
Right.
Okay? When a drug or any kind of an intervention, whether it's drug or non-drug, when they first come out, it's based on a relatively small number of people.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you can't, if you're testing a drug over a 10-year period, there are only so many people you can test over a 10-year period. And so you base your conclusion on that many people.
Right.
Over a period of 10 years, we continue to do research
on
those drugs.
Right.
Okay. So collecting hundreds or thousands of cases could change your conclusion.
Right.
All right. And so don't be thrown by this, well, they said this wasn't good, and it was like fat in your diet.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we thought for a long time that we should avoid fats. Well, we learned over time that that wasn't, because we just were able to do more studies.
Right.
And the more studies you do, the more people you study, the clearer the picture becomes.
Right.
And so, so don't be thrown by, well, they told us this and they told us that, and that wasn't true and this isn't true. Over time, information changes.
Right.
So,
and that brings up another great way to help you differentiate science from pseudoscience. Mm-hmm. Most science is not going to be so absolute.
That's
it's
right.
not going to say this will cure this or this
right.
will resolve this problem. Mm-hmm. It will say for, you know, this percentage of people or for many people or for some people with these
That's
problems,
right.
this has been shown to be
That's
effective.
Right. Even the most radical approaches, which are surgery, doesn't always work for everybody.
Right.
It should,
right.
but it does. You can have it'll work for 9 out of 10 people. But there are always a couple of people for
right.
whom it won't work. So
yeah, there was a guy here in Florida for a number of years who was selling these vitamin gummies, and he was proclaiming that it cured autism. So he was selling these, you know, lots of these to people all over the country, shipping them out to all these places. But it didn't work, of course, and because right. if we just think about this logically for a few minutes, if somebody is claiming that this product or this mm-hmm. system cures this condition,
right.
that would probably be well known.
It would be
publicized. It would be on TV. Your pediatrician would know.
Right.
Your doctor would know. So
yeah.
to say that when you're looking at these things, and it just kind of strikes you as, really? Wow.
Especially if it's radical and new. You know,
right.
if you've never heard about it, say, oh my gosh, we just made this huge discovery. Probably not.
Right.
You know,
right.
most of these new things would get a probably not.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So when you're Googling things or when you're trying to figure out, you know, a new way or a different way to deal with something that you're struggling with or to try to manage something with your child or your loved one, and you see some of these different techniques and these different strategies and these different interventions, put it to a test. Put it to a test first, probably through logic and through critical thinking and through Google Scholar and trying to figure out what does the research say about some of this, and what are other people saying about this, and does it make sense in my life? You know, I certainly wouldn't say that. You know, I know a lot of people. A lot of people who go around and live much of their life barefooted. I'm from the South, and have a lot of family members.
Some family members.
We
right.
and it, you know,
I'm
they
sure
have just as many.
Better.
They have just as many health problems as what we're seeing in the general population, anyways.
Right. Right.
So I don't know that I would. My experience would not suggest that, you know, being connected to the ground in that way.
Mm-hmm.
Would affect, you know, the prevalence of diabetes, for example.
Right.
Now, that said, if you're barefooted and you're walking around outside, what are you doing? You're walking around outside, which means that you're exercising. So is it the exercise or is it the walking around barefoot?
Or the vitamin D from the sunshine.
Exactly.
You know,
and so there's so many other factors involved. And again, it's just, you just have to think real critically about it. And before you jump on board and say, okay, well, this one's going to solve my problems.
Right. And having a healthy life is a long-term project
right.
of careful eating, careful exercise, careful sleeping, careful reduce your stress. I mean, it takes a long time. I was talking to a friend the other day who said she is now in her 70s and she had a physical and the doctor said, you are incredibly healthy for your age. And then she said, but I've been doing this stuff for 30
yeah.
or 40 years. She
right.
said, I've been doing these things. She said, I didn't know whether it was having an effect or not. But she said, I've been living a healthy life for a long time,
right.
eating carefully, taking milk, taking vitamins,
yeah.
Nothing too radical, but just living a healthy life.
Yeah.
And so she attributes her good health now to the way she took care of herself over a 30 or 40 year period.
Right.
And,
yeah.
and I think that's the ticket. That's
right.
the key.
Yeah. There are no quick fixes. There
mm-hmm.
are no, there is nothing that you can just do once Right. And it's going to fix the problem and prevent it from happening again.
Right, right.
You know, these are lifestyle changes that you have to make,
yeah,
regardless of what we're talking about.
And a healthy skepticism, right, is what we're advocating. And one other warning, just because it's on TV doesn't mean that it has been researched or shown to be effective. We have this, there's a funny thing that happened a generation ago, that if something was on TV, it was real.
Right.
You know, if it's on TV, it must be true. Well, you know, we all know that that's not true.
Right.
I mean, just because something is on TV
doesn't, or the internet,
doesn't make it legitimate.
Right.
Okay. So just because some speaker comes on or some program, something comes on TV, doesn't mean that it's been vetted. It doesn't mean that it's been researched. So again, be skeptical, even if you see it on TV. Maybe especially if you see it on TV.
And even if that person has doctor in front of their name,
yeah,
or MD or PhD or any of that kind of stuff after their name, it doesn't necessarily mean that what they're saying is absolutely true.
That's right. And I think a good example in our field today is this whole issue of brain mapping, that if you look at a very colorful map of the brain, that it's somehow telling you something about an individual.
Right.
And that we know it isn't. And there's been some literature come out in the last month or so about warning everybody, professionals and non-professionals, to be careful of these brain maps, because that's something that works for large groups of people. It's not a diagnostic tool for an individual,
right,
okay? Especially when it comes to things like emotional disorders and learning problems and those sorts of things. So be cautious. Just because somebody can produce a colorful map or they can put it on TV and it looks good, that makes good TV. It might not be good science.
Right, absolutely. So, all right. That was a heavy topic
we
for
had
a
planned
Tuesday
just
morning.
To introduce it, but we'd like to talk about this additionally. So
yeah,
if you have questions or if you're concerned about a treatment or an intervention and you want, give us a call. Let us know what's going on. We'll be happy to research it with you or for you. So
absolutely,
let us know.
Yeah, and we'll certainly be talking about it more.
Yeah. Yeah, this is a topic that I think we should. Yeah. Do some more work on.
All right. So, well, that wraps us up for this wonderful Tuesday, November 1.
Tuesday. That's right.
So we will be back tomorrow morning and with another show.
Tomorrow is Wednesday.
Yep. Great. November 2. Nope. Letters from the... I'm going to have to put the schedule like on the wall. So
you should put it up there. Like, we have a whiteboard there. You could put it up there and I would get it right. A little like daylight savings time.
Maybe. I'll write it real big so that you can
see it. So
that
I can see it. Because unlike reading, vision doesn't get better with age.
That's right.
You guys have a good day.
Yes, and we will see you in the morning. Bye-bye.